Got to turn it on. Okay, we have three arguments between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva if particular mitzvahs are optional or obligatory. We started with the husband, should he warn his wife or can he warn his wife? And then we had the second issue with the Kohen being tamei, his family, must he be or it's an optional? Now we come to the third and final machlokas along the same lines. And this is dealing with the words that say, Le'olam bahem ta'avodu. You shall work them forever. Okay? And this deals with the permission to acquire and work a Canaanite slave. We'll have to see. There's a lot of discussion. What kind of Canaanite slave are we talking about? But the Torah, the wording is, Le'olam bahem ta'avodum. You shall work them forever. Does that mean you may work them forever or you must work them forever? We will see. So, rishus. The first of it says rishus. That means you have permission to acquire and work a Canaanite slave. Divrei Rabbi Yishmael. These are the words of Rabbi Yishmael. Rabbi Akiva Omer. Rabbi Akiva says, chova, it's an obligation to work them. Now, here's the real point. To work them, you must work them forever, and you are not allowed to free them. Rabbi Shmuel says you may work them forever, but you don't have to work them forever, and you don't, and you could free them. That's the machlokas. Okay, let's take a look at what's going on over here. My time at Rabbi Shmuel. What is the logic of Rabbi Shmuel? So again, just like the last time, we start from the negative and we have to go something to exclude what the negative was. Just like by the Kohen, you can't become Tamei. Oh, but then except for this. And then this, yes, be Tamei. Similar ideas coming up here. We have let's start with the default position. The default position regarding the seven Canaanite nations, when the Jewish people came in to conquer the land of Israel, there were seven Canaanite nations. The pasuk says, Lo sechaya kol neshama. You don't spare anyone's life. You kill them all. Okay, you give them a choice. If they want to leave the country, they can leave the country. If they want to be servants to us as a nation and pay taxes. But otherwise, you kill them all out. Because they're very corrupt and terrible people.
Yeah, you can allow to leave them. To leave the country?
It says kill everyone. No. Okay. The Gemara says if they insist on staying, you're coming into the land. Yes. Yeshua sent letters out before he came in. Before he says, listen, you got three options, guys. Either get out, and the Girgashis did leave, and that's probably the source of how black people came to Africa. It's most likely the biblical source to that, because no one was living in Africa. So these are all descendants of Ham who were black. So that's probably the source of the black people in Africa. So one group decided to leave, and they left. If they wanted to be subservient to the Jews and be taxed to the Jews and let the Jews run the country, they could stay. But they'd have to follow seven Canaanite laws, which none of them wanted to follow seven Canaanite laws. Imagine if you came down and told people in America and Canada to keep the seven Canaanite laws. They say, get out of here. We're not going to do it. Forget it. I don't know if there's even one. I don't even know if there's one they keep. Okay? So you can imagine they wouldn't. That's exactly what the Muslims, according to their understanding, not correct, but are trying to do. They're trying to bring some kind of religion in their corrupt way. But anyway, Torah says, Lo sechaya kol neshama. You have to destroy them all. Well, it doesn't lend itself very much for having any slaves, does it? Right, so they can't be slaves. So that's the default position. But there's a verse that does allow slaves. So now I got to see what's it allowing. So since it said you can't let them live at all, so now itzrach nami lemichtav, we need a pasuk that says, Leolam bahem tavodu, for you to say you shall work them forever. Now, who are you letting work? I mean, how do you have a Canaanite slave working forever? So Gemara's going to explain. In other words, it's a contradiction in the Torah. The Torah says, kill them all out. Then it says, wait a minute, you could work them forever. Wait a minute, if you kill them all, how do you work them forever? So how we resolve it? So the answer is lemishri, to allow certain situations. Now listen carefully. It's not hard. Just have to just be, listen carefully. Lemishri echad mikolomos. Let's say a male from any one of the nations other than the seven Canaanite nations. There's more than seven nations of goyim in the world. There were seven Canaanite nations, and there's a bunch of other goyim. Now guess what? There are other goyim, let's just say, I know there wasn't so, but let's say a Frenchman. Okay, I know there was no one in France, just to make it, so let's say a Syrian. There was Assyria. Assyria was at that time. No obligation to kill out Assyria. No obligation. So what if an Assyrian man would live with a Canaanite woman? Okay, now they would produce a goy. Now, according to the goyish way, what is the the descent go from the father or the mother? So it's according to the goyim, it's goyim here. It's paternal. It's from the father.
Yeah, so he's Assyrian.
So he'd be an Assyrian. Yeah. Now, let's say he's living in the land of Canaan. That he, you could make a slave. Because you don't have to kill him out. He's not from the seven Canaanite nations.
Right, so then how can he be a slave? He's not from one of the nations.
What?
Doesn't the slave have to be a Canaanite?
Didn't say have to be. It didn't say that. Didn't say that at all. So let's read on. Lemishri echa mikamas. Let's read the whole thing. To allow, if one of the non-seven Canaanite nation people, a man, Shabala Knanis, who cohabited with a female Canaanite, Vaholate Mimeno Ben, and they had a kid. Okay? A woman from any of the seven nations, not just, okay, the Canaanite nations. Okay? So now, look at this. The people of all of them were called Canaanites. Okay, anyway, so now what happens? There's a son that's born. Now that son, who let's say happens to live in Canaan, you know, just happens to live in Canaan. Now they didn't have to be so formal. They could have just, you know, in Goyim, you know, I'm sure the Canaanites fought with other Goyish nations. I mean, mistendach shluchzich, right? You see this in the Arab world. So it could very well be a raiding party came in from Assyria. They came into Canaan. They beat them up, raped the women, and then the women had kids. You know, that's not an unusual scenario. So you have this Canaanite woman is giving birth to a child from a non-Canaanite father. Okay? Now, what's the Torah saying? Sha'ata rashoi liknosa. Now, that teaches that the child has the nationality of the father who's non-Canaanite, and you don't have to kill him, and now you can buy him as a slave. You with me? And that's what the Pasuk says, that you may work them forever. You may work them forever. And now, how do we know all this? Detanya, we learn in a Braisa.
Can I ask a question before we go further?
Well, no, you know what, maybe better let's just...
If we kill all the slaves, the women slaves as well, how would they have any children?
So hold
all
on.
All the Canaanite slaves are killed.
So hold.
Women included. How would they have children?
Before you killed them. It could be one answer. They have kids. They have a lot of kids. They had all these kids before we came into Israel.
I guess the question would be more like, how do you know all these kids are there? How do you know which kids are from a Syrian father? Which kids are from a Syrian father?
Okay, so this is, you'd have to find out. Yeah. If you didn't know, you'd have doubts, you know. Again, this is only if you know.
How would you know so you can't be killed off?
Yeah.
Okay, that's a technical question. We're looking at the theory. Anyway, now let's look at the commentary. The Braisa actually elucidates a different verse to support Rabbi Shmuel's point, that a verse is needed to offset the impact of you shall not spare by sparing the lives and bringing the purchase of a certain group of Canaanites. Specifically, the Braisa derives from this other verse that it's the type of half-Canaanite that is the offspring of a Canaanite mother and non-Canaanite father who may be spared and purchased, etc., etc. Okay. The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa that says the following. Minayin lecha mina umas. I know if they're one of the non-Canaanite nations, men. Shibo ala Canaanis. That cohabits with a female Canaanis. Vavad mimeno ben. That if you have a child from that, and it's a boy. And how do we know? Sha'ato rashoi liknosa be'eved. How do you know you can purchase him as a slave? Okay, how do you, what?
That was your question.
No, but not how do you know who he is, but how do you know that you're permitted? Assuming that you know, how do you know you're permitted to buy him?
Yeah.
Okay, So that you can purchase that the child as a slave. Okay. And he owns him completely. Talmud Lomar comes the following pasuk in the Torah. We're going to have to look at it carefully. Let's look at the whole pasuk over here. It says, from the nations that surround you, from among them you may purchase a slave and a maidservant. Okay? From the nations around you. There the Torah sanctions the purchase of slaves from the other nations surrounding Eretz Canaan. In other words, you can get slaves who are non-Canaanites. However, purchasing from the seven Canaanite nations themselves is forbidden if it's a straight Canaanite, father and mother size, since the Torah says you shall not spare the life of any soul. So they have two types of goyim. You have Canaanites, you got to wipe them out. You have non-Canaanites that you can have wars with them too, and you can acquire their slaves. The next verse is the one that the Pasuk is going to give now. The one quoted by Gomorrah then teaches that if men from the surrounding nations come to live among you, what does that mean? Goyim from the surrounding nations come to live among you, meaning in Eretz Canaan, and marry and beget children from the daughters Canaan. It means a non-Canaanite man with a Canaanite woman. You may purchase these children, also slaves, also from the children of the residents who live among you, meaning to say of the men from the surrounding nations who have come to live in Canaan and have married Canaanite women, from among them their children you may purchase. The price of dust derives from verse 45 that one may spare the life of a child of a Canaanite woman and a non-Canaanite man and may purchase the child as a slave. Okay? This is all from it says, the Pasuk says, V'gam mibnei ha-toshavim ha-gorim imachem, etc., etc. So that's how you know that if a non-Canaanite man cohabits with a Canaanite woman, you may purchase that child as a slave. That's what the Torah says. So now, Yochel, I might have thought, Af haknani shabalach zminos. What about the reverse? A Canaanite man who cohabits with a non-Canaanite goyim, and they have a kid. Sha'ata rashai liknos, but that you can buy him as a slave. Okay, but really, what's going to be? That kid's going to have what nationality? Canaanite. Talmud Lomar, the pasuk goes on and says, Asher tolidu ba'artzachem, from among them you may purchase from their family. What does that mean? Whom they begot in your land. Mean to say, min hanoladim ba'artzachem, from amongst those who were born in your land to Canaanite mothers, from non-Canaanite fathers, velo min hagorim bartzechem, and not from those children who were born abroad to non-Canaanite mothers and Canaanite fathers, and were later returned by their fathers to reside in your land. Okay, so what is the verse saying? That the calf site of a Canaanite woman and a non-Canaanite man may be purchased. Let's look at the note here. It's going to be a little bit helpful. Women generally remain in the land of their birth. Okay, that's an important rule. And men are wont to travel abroad. That's the way it normally goes. You just go to New York in the slums. The woman stays in the house, the guy's all around. That's the Navi says that. He says that zirmas susim zirmosim. They're like horses. They run around. But that's a general, and it makes sense, even on a practical level. The woman can't travel around. She's got kids. The guy can go where he wants. Therefore, the Torah's reference to children begot in your land. What does it mean, a child who's born in your land? What scenario would that be? Means the offspring of a non-Canaanite man who came to Eretz Canaan and married the local woman, and therefore they were begot in your land. The begot in your land are going to be from a Canaanite woman specifically. On the other one side, it says, who reside in your land must be the offspring of a Canaanite man who traveled abroad and married non-Canaanite women and subsequently brought their families back to Eretz Canaan, because the man would bring his Canaanite man could go outside, because they're attacking other countries. They're going, and they would attack other ones.
Come back to Canaan, you know he's going to get killed.
He's fighting. He's listen, you know, but the bottom line, Shelley, you know as well as anybody, you learned Sefer Yehoshua and Shoftim. Did they indeed kill out all the Canaanites at the end of the day?
No, they didn't.
What?
No,
no, they didn't. They didn't finish off the job.
That's right.
That they didn't finish off the job. But we're saying, So therefore, who reside in your land... What do you mean reside? So there's two clauses. One says we're born in your land, and one say who reside in your land. Born in your land is going to be born from a Canaanite. Remember, the initial rule is you can't let any Canaanites live. Now, what does that mean? The father and mother are both Canaanites. All of a sudden, Torah says you can acquire slaves. So what's going on? So it's saying you can acquire a slave who was born in your land. Well, how could that be? It was a non-Canaanite father cohabited with a Canaanite woman who was born in your, the kid was born in your land. On the other hand, those who reside in your land, that means the Canaanite man was cohabited with a non-Canaanite woman outside of Israel, comes back in the land and lives in the land, and those, you cannot have them as slaves. You got to kill them, exactly. For since the verse implicitly prohibits purchasing the children of non-Canaanite women who came with their fathers to Eretz Canaan, logic dictates that these fathers are Canaanite men for their nationality. It's the only possible reason for the sale of their children. So that's what the Torah is saying. You cannot. The lo mina gorim eretzachem. All right, so let's look at the pasuk, and now it's going to make sense. Let's find the pasuk again.
That's the Torah says.
By men it goes by the father. By goyim it goes by the father. Yeah. So let's go back. I want to get the exact verse. Vegam mibnei toshavim 25:44. Let's see if that's the one that's going to do it. Nope. Let's try again. Okay, now we're talking about having slaves. Okay. Those of 44. Both your male slaves and your female slaves, which you shall have, shall be of the nations that are around you. Now, how are you going to have that around you? Of them shall you buy male slaves and female slaves. Didn't say which ones yet, from around you, right? And moreover, of those who are sojourning with you, mehem, tiknu, the ones that were born in your land, that can be for a portion. Now, who's born in your land? That means the Canaanite woman was with a non-Canaanite man. It can't both be Canaanites because we really can't have them. Okay. Okay. And then, so that is allowing that.
But does it say anywhere here that they both have to be Canaanites?
Earlier it says you can't let any Canaanite live. That's another plus.
It doesn't say anything about that.
Well, if it's saying that you can use them as a slave, so now how is that going to be? So you've got to craft a scenario where it's possible, where they're not legally Canaanites.
Yeah.
So that's what he's saying. The gami bnei atoshavim hagorim imachem mehem tiknu misham asher asher holidu be'artzachem, which were born in your land. Those are the ones that you can have. And look at the next pasuk, mem vav. And you shall take them as an inheritance for your children after you, to inherit them for you a possession. Now here's the clause. They shall be your slaves forever. Now is that...
There's a but there.
No, but is that obligatory or is that an option?
That's
the machlokas. All right? But that's who we're talking about. This is the only slave we could have. The only slave you can have is a Canaanite woman with a non-Canaanite man. And that's just what we were proving from the psukim.
All from the nations around you.
That's right. That's what we're proving from the psukim. Okay. So, fine. So that's how he learns it. So there it's optional. That's optional. If you know you have them, and if you want to free them, you can keep them forever. And if you want, you can let them go. You can free them. Rabbi Akiva, he asks a question. He doesn't accept this the way it is. And he will learn that you'll keep them forever. One second. Does he not accept? But it is a brisa, though. There is a brisa that was quoted. Rabbi Kiva can't argue with a brisa. So presumably he does, and so you shall work them forever. It's merely extending permission, not teaching a prohibition against the men and slaves. So he says, "Mi mehem tiknu nafka." He says, the law that one may purchase as a slave, the offspring of a Canaanite woman and non-Canaanite woman, is derived from what words? Mehem tiknu. From amongst them you may purchase. Okay? So it already says, you may purchase them. So you already know that you can have them. So li'olam ba'em tavodu lamale. So why do I need you shall work them forever? If it already says you can purchase them, why does it have to say that you work them forever? It already says you can purchase them. Must mean lechova. It must mean it's forever an obligation. In other words, if it just says you can purchase them, okay, purchase them. I can. That means I own them. If I purchase them, well, I guess I could do what I want. I can let them go. I could not let them go. Why does it have to repeat and then say you shall work them forever? That extra clause must mean it's not just an option that you can let them go, but you got to keep them forever. Rabbi Yishmael says no. He says, Bahem velo bacheim. That verse teaches a different law. When it says, Mimehem, it says that you may impose slave labor upon them, but you may not impose slave labor against your brothers. Bahem means working them, but not your Jewish people. That's what is coming. In other words, you could treat them like mamish slaves. Real slave labor, but that's coming to exclude. You can't do that to a Jewish slave. A Jewish slave, Yishmael derives this law from you shall work them forever. Rabbi Kiva says work them forever means forever. You know, he's saying the them, which implies that it's only them, the Canaanite slaves, who are the subjects of the verse, who may be treated servilely, like a Jewish servants must be accorded a greater degree of respect. Since the verse is needed for this teaching and not serve as an injunction against emancipating slaves. In other words, Rabbi Kiva says you work them forever. It means them and not a Jew. It's not coming to say it's an obligation. It's just to exclude a Jew. So Rabbi Kiva says, no, I can learn that from something. I can learn to not treat a Jew that way from somewhere else. Rabbi Kiva says, no. It says, b'acheichem d'seifa d'kra nafka. When it says, upon your brethren, that's from the end of the pasuk. We can learn this. The law prohibiting imposing slave labor upon your brothers is learned from another pasuk, where it says, "Ubachecha b'nei Yisrael ish b'chivlo." So it says explicitly, "But your brethren, the child of Israel, man with his brother, you shall not subjugate him to hard law." Ever. So that's a straight. That's exactly saying that. So now, why do I need to say it twice? So what's Rabbi Shmuel going to go back to that default answer we're using all the time? Right. Look what the commentary says. Here the verse states explicitly, the one may not treat a Jewish servant in a demeaning manner. Obviously, the word them is not needed to intimate this self-same law. According to the phrase, you'll work them forever, is superfluous and means you have to keep them forever. So what's Rabbi Shmuel's answer going to be? Like we've had twice already. Rabbi Shmuel will answer, I did the kasev b'acheichem. Once it was written about your brothers one way, Siv Nami Bahem, it writes it a second time, Bahem for them as well. Once you did it one way, we do the same thing for stylistic reasons, we do the same thing again. When it talks about your Jewish brothers was one scenario, you have to treat them properly. Then it talks about non-Jews, and non-Jews you could treat them badly, but not Jews, you can't, but Jews you can't do it that way. It's a stylistic thing again. Like it at Tanya Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Shmuel has said three times already, the Tanvei Rabbi Shmuel, Kol Parsha Shenemar Nisha, any passage sorry, that was said and repeated, Lo Nishas Elvish Vil Dover Shin Skadish, but is only mentioned for the new thing, but you still will use the old text again. And that new teaching was for that point, for the non-Jews. So therefore, it's the same thing. So again, different textual sources make them work forever. Is it extra? Is it not extra? Rabbi Akiva says it's extra. Therefore, you may not free. So it really comes up very interesting. What is the case of a Canaanite slave? A Canaanite slave is when the woman is the Canaanite. That's the only case of Canaanite slave. And now there's a machlokes between him and Rabbi Akiva. Are you permitted to free them? Rabbi Elezer, Rabbi Shmuel says you could free them if you want. You don't have to work them forever. Rabbi Akiva says you have to work them forever. We paskin like Rabbi Akiva, you have to work them forever.
So where did we learn, Tamar, that after 7 years...
That's a Jewish slave.
That's only Jewish slave.
6 years.
6 years, yeah. Only Jewish slaves.
That's right. After 50 years, even if he got his ear pierced, he gets freed. But goyim, it's an inheritance. It goes from father to son, etc., etc. Can't free them. It's not good for them to be free. They'll cause havoc in the country. So they've got to be slaves forever, according to Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Shmuel says, if you want to free him, you can. Okay, we got 5 minutes. So now we're going to do a little bit of Agada to Gemara. We're out of the woods in this. And I'm not exactly sure where this part fits into the flow. And it's good that women are not in the class today, right now. Amar Rav Chista says the following. Zenusa Babesa, if there's adultery in a house, how bad is adultery in a house? It's like a kirya, that's a type of a worm, to sesame seeds. In other words, a worm consumes sesame. He destroys it. Yeah. So adultery destroys the house. So adultery in a home is as bad as the worm is for the sesame. Now, why are you picking worm and sesame? So the kirya worm is situated inside the sesame seed. It consumes the seed from within, leaving only the outer shell intact, so that the unsuspecting observer notices nothing amiss until the damage is complete. You go by these sesame seeds, you don't even know until you open up, there's nothing there. Similarly, a promiscuous wife surreptitiously dissipates her husband's money to support her infidelity, and the husband's unaware of it until the estate is totally depleted. So that's the issue over here. So that's why he's using that analogy. That's why adultery is not good. The wife has the credit card. And he's looking, whoa, how did the credit card get so bad? Well, I had to buy some things. What is this? You bought men's clothing. I don't see any new men's clothing or whatever. So that's the problem. But it's too late. Once the bill's in and you got huge bills, you're finished. From Rav Chista, Rav Chista made another statement. Tukfa babesa, anger in a house. When somebody's angry in a house, it's also kikari the shemusha. It's like the kariya worm to the sesame. Same thing. And we'll look at the next note.
In these cases, we assume the woman is the perpetrator.
We didn't say anything yet.
Yep.
We didn't say. Did you say man or woman yet?
No.
Now we're going to say. Hold it. I just said that because I know what's coming up. I know what's coming up. The next line is coming up. But however, the Gemara clarifies the two statements. Edividi, both statements, the one of adultery and anger, it only refers be'itzasa with respect to the woman.
Uh-huh.
When the woman is preoccupied with infidelity, what's going to happen? She doesn't take care of the home. She doesn't watch the kids. She gets rid of all the possessions. And anger, since she's always angry at the husband, she doesn't watch over the house, and she squanders everything he owns as well. So that's, in other words, the home will be destroyed if the woman is the infidel and if she is the angry one. Avol begavra, but by a man, leislan ba, that will not apply. Doesn't mean to say he's allowed to do it. It means to say the house will not collapse from the inside. That's what it means. Since usually your husband does not assume the domestic responsibilities, right? However, if the husband indulges in adulterous relationships, he will certainly lose his wealth. That's true. But in other words, what he's saying is basically, let's think about this normally. If you think of dysfunctional homes, which dysfunctional home is worse? Where the mother's the adulterer or the father's the adulterer? The mother. Because at least if the father's the adulterer, the mother will take care of the flock. Right? Which home is more dysfunctional? When the mother has a temper you can't control or the father has a temper you can't control? Which will be more... I'm not saying either one is good. But again, more dysfunctional is the mother. The mother's the anchor of the house. The father can do what he wants. At the end of the day, if the mother's okay, she's the one who's going to give the love to the children. She'll take care of the house. We're not... So the Gemara isn't saying the woman is worse than the man, per se, but the effects... If the mother will be adulterous or the mother will be angry, it will cause more of an internal destruction of the home. Same thing when they're angry. Angry, like just like the sesame. On the outside, everybody looks at the family from that. Oh, looks like a model family. The man's such a nice guy. And sure, in the house, he's a monster. So the house from the inside is collapsing, while the outside might be looking good. So all the Torah is saying is that if neither husband or wife should do any of this stuff. But if it's going to happen, The woman, from the woman's side, will cause more self-implosion of the home than if a man does. And that's the point that it's saying. And I don't really know what that connection is to our Gemara. Okay, we'll stop here. And tomorrow, not tomorrow, month. What?
Connection to Sotah. When she drinks the bitter waters.